Okay, so our topic tonight is, I guess we would say, in Yana Diyoma, the topic of the day. What are people talking about? You can't open a newspaper and take your head out of the sand without seeing what's going on in the media. And the issue of abuse, it just continues to mushroom. You know, literally every time you turn on the news, there's some other angle, there's some new person. I forwarded to you that article in last week's New York Times, but the truth is, even since then, I think that list has grown. And so it behooves us to really think about what does it mean for us as observant people, as B'nai Torah, as Avdei Hashem, how do we relate to this, A, in the world, and B, how does it relate to us? Because when things are going on outside, to suggest or to think somehow naively that it doesn't affect us and that, you know, nishtvin ins, we don't have these kind of questions or challenges, so that's just dangerous. It's not just naive, it's dangerous. So we need to think about them. At the same time, you know, it's probably good to talk with real experts, people who actually know something about these topics. So I don't fit into those categories of experts or people who know something, but I have done some reading and reflecting what other rabbis have said or written, and a couple of other important pieces that we'll share tonight. So these are just some initial thoughts and reflections, and I'm sure everybody can add to them or, you know, reflect on them as you see fit. But maybe the first place to start is your first page in the packet, which is Amar Mokam Anilach. This past summer, the Tradition magazine, the journal Tradition published by the RCA, had a special edition, a symposium, The Problem of Sexual Abuse in Our Community. So the entire Tradition, which as a member of the RCA I received, the entire Tradition is devoted to this topic, to sexual abuse. So first of all, we should recognize that there are people who are dealing with, and it has a very interesting group of people. I can get you some of these articles, but I printed for you the table of contents. I thought it was very worthwhile. But maybe we can look at the next page, earlier in Tanakh, where you will start to find a model or a pattern of this kind of behavior that we are identifying. Yeah, there are more down. So if you look, the pasuk describes. The pasuk describes how Shmuel was inaugurated into the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu under the tutelage of Eli, and he was brought there by his father Elkanah. Top of page 1. Vayelech Elkanah haramasa al beiso vahanar haya misharisas Hashem es pnei Eli haKohen. So Eli is the Kohen, Shmuel is the understudy. Says the Pasuk, Ubnei Eli bnei Belial lo yadu es Hashem. The people, the sons of Eli, they were bnei Belial, I guess you translate loosely as they were riffraff, they were lowlifes, and they didn't know the Ribbono Shel Olam. And what happened? Umishpat haKohanim es haAm, kol ish zoveach zeva uba nar haKohen kivashal habasar. What was the law of the Kohanim vis-a-vis the people? Anybody who would offer a korban, uba hanar haKohen, the kid, the lad, the young man who was the Kohen, he would come kivashal habasar when it was cooking in the pot. Vahamazlig sholosh hashinayim biyado, and he had a fork that had three fingers in it, three teeth. So it looked like a fork. What would he do? He would take the fork, vihika bakior, and he would hit the pot like this, and he would stick his fork into the pot of all the people who are coming there to offer their karbanos. Vadud ova kalachas ova por kol asher yala hamazle gikach hakohen. Whatever he can pick up in his fork, it goes to the kohen. Wait a minute. You look in the pasuk in Chumash, it doesn't say anything about Kohanim taking from your pot. You know, every korban, there's a specific, a kulin gets, you know, one portion, and then korbanos get a different portion, zro l'chayayim v'keva. But these guys, look what they're doing. Kol asher yal ha'mazah yikach ha'koin kocha yasu l'chol Yisrael Haboim Shom Beshilo. What happens? They're going to do this to everybody who comes. Here are people who are supposed to be in a position of religious leadership and authority. So what happens? The people who are coming to offer their karbanos, what do they know? They're not necessarily experts in the laws of Kachim. Not only that, a lot of people who are coming to offer karbanos are themselves very vulnerable. If you have to come to bring a karban chatas, you come with hat in hand, and you're going to tell the kohen, I have to bring a chatas. And the kohen will say, okay, you better do tshuva. You have a chatas. Well, we have to make sure. You brought a chatas. Why? Well, you had to do something very serious to bring a karban chatas. It has to be a shigugaso karis. It has to be one of the most severe averas. So people are coming. Nafsha b'chapam. And what does the kohen do? This kohen? He exploits them. He takes advantage of them. These b'nei Eli. They're abusing their power. They're taking advantage of the poor people who are coming to bring karbanos. And then it describes how they would take the meat from them. And they would threaten the people. It says in the end of Pasuk Tezayin, if you don't do what I say, limlo lakachti b'choska, I'm going to take it whether you like it or not. So what does the Torah describe? Vatihi chatas ha'na'arim gedola ma'odas b'nei Hashem, ki ni'atzuhu ha'nashem es minchas Hashem. These people are... Ni'etz means to absolutely defame something. It's insulting to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's offensive. Look what's happening here. It's a total corrupt system. So this is horrible. It's interesting how the Navi contrasts this behavior with Shmuel. Shmuel is a young man. He's doing what he's supposed to do. He's there with his little, the Navi describes, he had a me'il katan, his mom made him a little jacket, he wore the little jacket. What's it contrasting? L'chura, the innocence and the purity and the service of Shmuel with the abusive behavior of the other Kohanim. But what's interesting is to see the development. And I didn't see any Mefarshim, I didn't look far, but I just noticed you read the Psukim, you start with this kind of abuse. And then what happens? Continue further. Pasuk Chaf Beis. Ve'eli Shama, and Eli here, Ve'eli Zakein Ma'od, he gets very old. Ve'shama Eis Asher Asa Asher Yasa, line 21, Banav L'chol Yisrael. And now what happens? What does the Tanakh tell us? What were they doing? Ve'eis Asher Yishkevun Es Hanashim Hatzovos Pesach Ol Moed. So Rashi quotes two opinions. One is, and the Mefarshim all have these two different tracks. One is, it means that because they would kind of manipulate and control the Seder of the Karbanos, so women who were, let's say, Zavos or Yoldos, they would have to bring Karbanos, and they would be congregating outside, and they would have to wait, and they couldn't come home. And that's why it's as if the B'nai Eli, who were controlling the Seder HaVodah, so they were keeping these women from their husbands. That's why it's referred to as Asher Yishkevun. But that's not the whole pshat. Rashi, his second pshat, I think it's the first one that he quotes, he says it's Pshuto Kamashmo, that they were sexually abusing women who came to offer karbanos in the Beis HaMikdash. That's what it says. Rashi says the first line is Kipshuto. And the Mefarshim go back and forth between these two Mahalchim. But it's interesting to me, what comes first? What comes first is a simple abuse of power and authority. First they start sticking their forks in people's pots where they don't belong. And then, all of a sudden, look what you have. And Eli hears about this and he tells them, this doesn't sound good, this is wrong. But ultimately, Eli is visited by a horrible curse in the next parak. They both die in one day, Chofni and Pinchas, and his descendants are going to be punished because of this. You see how an example of an abuse of power in a religious context, in the Makom HaMikdash, how could you even countenance such a thing? And the Tanakh doesn't pull any punches. It doesn't, sugarcoat in any way. It tells you exactly the way it is, and it tells you exactly how the Ribbono Shel Olam thinks about it, and exactly what the severe crime it is, and how it's going to be punished. And you could see how the Ribbono Shel Olam takes this so seriously, because we say to the Ribbono Shel Olam, "Is ozer dalim hoshiana." The Ribbono Shel Olam is always looking out for the ger and the yasam. Why is he looking out for these people? Because the Torah tells us. Because no one else is going to look out for them. The ger, the yasam, the almana, the hayaki yitzaki lai v'shamati kichanun ani. The Ribbono Shel Olam, we have an expression: "V'elokim yivake shesan yirdaf." The Ribbono Shel Olam is going to take up the cause of the people who are the pursued. So the Ribbono Shel Olam takes this very seriously and doesn't whitewash it and doesn't hide from it. And this contrast between these people, these abusive Kohanim, and Shmuel, I think is put there deliberately to show you who is a mensch, who is roy to be the Manig Yisrael, and who are going to be cut off and cast away. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam says, this can't be. How are you talking? Because when you think about the effect, and I can't even imagine, I've only read and heard, you know, sometimes you hear these stories about people who undergo these types of abuses. It's not just that their childhood was ruined. Their whole life was affected. It's impossible to just to do away. I mean, right? It so deeply affects, Rahmanul Islam, these people. It's a Harris Gomor. It's you could talk about it even in terms of Pikuach Nefesh, Mamish. Talk about it totally in terms of Pikuach Nefesh. So the idea that it is a serious thing can't be understated and needs to be addressed and understood, the seriousness of it, the severity of it. So in this context, perhaps, we can further appreciate why Chazal, basing themselves on the Torah, but Chazal were very careful about, in general, about healthy boundaries, especially when it comes to genders. So if you look on page 2, Shulchan Aruch tells us in Eben Ezer and Simon Kaf Aleph, we need proper boundaries. Lehisrachik min ho'arayos. Tzarech adam lehisrachik mehanoshim ma'od ma'od. A man has to keep himself at a distance from women very, very. Now, this Shulchan Aruch should not be misconstrued to say that means that women have to sit in the back of a bus and other things. No, that's not what it says. But it does say that gender separation is important. I was reading an interview earlier this week about a particular person in the media who was under suspicion, an actor who was being discussed one of these things. And I watched the short clip on the news online to see this conversation. He starts describing how, you know, in those days, years ago, we were on a set, we were shooting for 16 hours, and things, you know, people say this, and this, they say that, and I happen to, you know, maybe I touched her like this, maybe like that. But if you put up a siag, if you put up a fence initially where those types of things aren't countenanced at all, so then you have set a protective fence. You know, if someone ever saw me kiss someone else's wife in the hallway of Or Torah on a Shabbos morning, they would say, that's pretty unusual. They wouldn't expect to see that because that's against what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. So therefore, if you put up that fence, if you create that healthy boundary, then when somebody starts to cross over that line, then you say, wait a second, what's going on? As opposed to, if you start with a circumstance where things are very loose, where it's very gray, and that's why the Shulchan Aruch goes on. He says, "Va'aser likrots biyadav oberaglav." You can't make gestures with your hands or with your feet, ularamos be'enav, you know, making googly eyes and things like that. The Shulchan Aruch is very, it's almost uncomfortable to read this Shulchan Aruch. It's like, well, what is he talking about? We have to set up boundaries. And then the Shulchan Aruch goes further in the next Siman. We're not going to do the whole thing, but go to Siman Chav Beis. What does he say in Chav Beis, the Shulchan Aruch? Isser Yichud. What does that mean? What's that? Right? And so the Shulchan Aruch continues. What's that? You can't be alone. Shulchan Aruch continues that there's a takana after the episode of Amnon and Tamar that even with a penuya, what does Shulchan Aruch say here? Asur lehisyached. Where is it? Asur lehisyached im erva meha arayos bein zekena bein yalda shedavar ze gorim legalos erva. This type of behavior where a man and a woman are alone in a secluded area is prohibited because we know that it can create an environment for inappropriate things to be happening. And what Rabbi Yudin would say, we had it first. Now, it's obvious. Nobody in their right mind would ever have a meeting, and no, you know, man would ever have a meeting behind a locked door with no windows. One of the things, I don't think Rabbi Metenki was so happy about me with me about this, but one of the things that happened when Baruch Hashem, the Academy, welcomed us to the new building, and they did give us office space, and now I have a little office, but I made a little bit of a stink when I got my office. I'm not sure how many thousands of dollars it cost him, but my office, which is wonderful, it's very luxurious, my office did not have... It's wider than my arms in both directions, which is great. I love it. It's very good. But it didn't have a window. I told him, I said, I can't have an office without a window. Even if the door is unlocked, even it opens to the Beis Medrash. Today you have to take the Hilchos Yichud and you'd be more machmir. But Chazal had it first. They said it's not shayach that a man and a woman should be alone in a circumstance that's private. However, the Shulchan Aruch says, unless you have a specific kind of shmirah, so sometimes you have a wife who's there, or baal ba'ir, all the halachas of yichud. But the idea is that you create a safe place for people that nobody should ever have a pischon peh. So today, would it ever be that you should meet somebody, shalom aleichem, in an office, right? Would you ever have a meeting in an office, even in a doctor's office? No doctors will ever meet with patients behind a locked door that they can't be walked in on by a nurse. Would you ever have a consult with a client? Never. This is already, Chazal set this out dori doros before, and it's for the same purpose. It's to establish the proper hagdaras, the boundaries between genders, so that we avoid these kind of things, because that's the nature of the Yetzer Hara. The challenge is what happens when the perpetrators are the rabbis. When the perpetrators know what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. When you don't have to give them a shir and divrei chizuk. When the halacha is not adequate, because they're not abiding by the halacha, they're abusing the halacha. So then what happens? So we, as rabbis, we look ourselves in the mirror and we say, what do we do with this? So Rav Schwartz Shlita, when there was a particular catastrophic incident of a so-called rabbi spying on people in the mikveh, which is not over yet, by the way, because if you remember the episode there that happened in that place in Washington, it's not over, because a couple of weeks ago, when things started to be discussed about the senatorial candidate in Alabama, who you heard about, you know what, an op-ed appeared in the New York Times that week. Roy Moore reminds me of my rabbi. And it was one of the victims of Oso Hoish, of that person in Washington. This month in the New York Times. The Harris, the destruction, doesn't just go away. So what happens when it's a rabbi? So I was meeting with Rav Schwartz afterwards, and I said to him, Rebbe, I said, how do we deal with this? What does this mean for us? How do we take care of ourselves and make sure that, God forbid, we shouldn't end up like some crazy sicko? Who knows? You know, he started somewhere. He probably was, you know, and you can go down, unfortunately. Now you read a litany of cases. Open this Tradition magazine. It's one catastrophe after the next, what they're describing Lo Aleinu. So one of the ha'aras that Rabbi Schwartz had was an issue of midos. He said, you know what we need to do? We need to work on our midos constantly. And the more I processed that message from him, and the more I understood it, he should live me well, I understood what he meant and how powerful that was. You know, the Bali Musar talk about what's the chief midah of all the midos. What would you say is like the top midah? So the Orcha Sadiqim and many other Bali Musar say, you know what the worst midah in the world is? The shorish of all midos rows? That's right, is gaiva, is arrogance. And that's why the Rambam says, the Rambam is very much into being balanced. The Rambam talks about the idea of the median, the middle ground. The Rambam says, however, when it comes to two midas and hilchos deos, there's two areas in which you have to be an extremist. They are gaiva and kas. And kas, frustration and anger, is a result of gaiva. I didn't get what I want, so I got angry. You don't get angry if you don't have any gaiva. So gaiva is the shorish of all midos roos. So if I go back to where it all comes from, you go back to that same story in the Tanakh. It goes back to a sense of arrogance, a sense of hubris, that it's about me and taking power. What is the definition of anava as opposed to gaiva? So Meir Tversky, and why you once had a fantastic ha'ara, anava does not mean to say that you're a nothing. There was an old story that Rabbi Cheskel Abramsky was once called to testify in some court case in England. He was a dayan in England for many years before he moved to Israel. So he was asked by the judge, he said, "Excuse me, are you Rabbi Abramsky?" He says, "Yes." "Are you a rabbinical judge?" He said, "Yes." He says, "How do you rank in terms of authoritative stature in Great Britain?" And he said, "I am the most senior religious arbiter in the Jewish community in all of Great Britain." And the judge said to him, "Excuse me, don't you learn about humility?" And Rabbi Abramsky said, "Your Honor, I'm under oath." So what Diane Abramsky meant to say was, I have to know who I am. You know, and you leverage that in different ways. I mentioned recently in the Monday Shiur an awesome story. I love this story about Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Shlomo Zalman was one of the most humble people who ever walked this earth. Shlomo Zalman, one of the best pictures of him, is making an obscenely grotesque face at a convention when somebody was introducing him with one of these like long hespedim type of introductions, and you could see he was visibly sick from this kind of flattery. So Shlomo Zalman once was approached Nebuch by a couple, by parents, who had a child who was very, very ill emotionally. He had a very serious developmental issue, and he couldn't stay at home. And the parents needed to move into a particular home, but the child refused. He was a teenage boy, I think. That was kind of the circumstance. So they came to Shlomo Zalman. They were mamish broke, and they didn't know what to do. So Shlomo Zalman said, "Let me talk to him." So they arrived in Rav Shlomo Zalman's apartment, Shari Chesed, with this young man. And Rav Shlomo Zalman said to the man, he said, "You know who I am?" And the boy said, "Yes." He says, "Do you know that I'm Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach?" And the boy said, "Yes, of course I know that." And he says, "Do you know that I'm one of the most important poskim in all of Eretz Yisrael today?" And the boy said, "Yes, of course, he knows that." So he says, Rav Shlomo Zalman says to him, he says, "You know that there is such and such a place where they need a mashkiach. I need to supervise this kitchen in such and such a place. But I live in Shari Chesed, and I'm an old man. I'm looking to find someone who can work and be my mashkiach. And they have to be very trustworthy, because I'm the greatest rabbi in all of Israel." Says Rav Shlomo Zalman to this boy, he says, "Do you think you would be my mashkiach? And you would go and live in this place, and you will check on the kitchen every day to make sure that all the food is kosher?" And the boy, young man, says, "Of course, I'm going to get to be the mashgiach." He tells his parents, "I'm going to be the mashgiach for Rabbi Auerbach." So Shlomo Zalman was the greatest anav of his door. You can imagine what level of anava. So an anav doesn't mean to think that you're a nobody. An anav means, Rabbi Tversky pointed out, he said, anav means to know where everything comes from. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu ish Moshe anav mi'ot in kol ha'adam? Because he saw with the aspaklaria hameira, he saw with the clear glass that he was nothing. Leis be migar meklum. It was all the Ribbono Shel Olam. He's just a kli. So that's why he was humble, because he saw the truth. The truth is that everything is from him, with a capital H, from Meito Yisbarach, and we're nothing. What is gaiva? Gaiva says, no, I'm a somebody. Ich bin, I am, and then you fill in the blank. Once you start with ich bin, I am, you're already. You're off on the gaiva foot. You're on the right foot for gaiva. That's exactly how it starts. I am a somebody, because it's about me. If that's the case, when you are, intoxicated with yourself, when you think you're a somebody, so of course when people come with karbanos, I don't suspect that these sons of Eli started out as oizvarfin, but you know what? Sometimes power corrupts. So they start thinking about themselves, people coming to us. We're in charge of the Beis HaMikdash. So it's magia to us that when you come, we should stick our fork in your magia to us, of course. And the power, the gaiva, it totally corrupts the whole situation. I think even in the word power, I think you can see this distinction. In New York, the power company is called Con Ed, Consolidated Edison. It's not to be confused with ComEd, Commonwealth Edison, not the same. But when we lived in New York, I don't know if it's still the case, when we lived in New York, they had a slogan, they had an advertising slogan for Con Ed when they deregulated the energy industry. It was called Power Your Way. Power Your Way. So you get to choose how you want your energy delivered. You want to choose how you want your electricity. When you're living in the city, you can tell them whatever you want. So that stuck with me, because the word power can have two different connotations. One connotation of power is it's about control. The other is it's about a power company. It's like the energy that goes in your house. It's light. So there are two kinds of power. The Torah is very powerful. So you can have somebody who utilizes Torah in a powerful way, which is lara, because they use it as a means of controlling people, of asserting themselves, lording over people. Or you could use it as a way, as a power plant, as a source of inspiration for people, as a source of illumination to light up people's lives. That's the distinction. How are you using the power of Torah? Is it the power in the sense of control, of gaiva, of it's about me? Or I'm not anything. I'm just going to share with you the light that I have, and I'm not here to control you. It's very important to see that distinction. And I think that's what Rav Schwartz meant, and that's a lot of times where people get lost. They do crazy things. They do abusive things because they get intoxicated with themselves. There was a particular rabbi who was, he is a brilliant man, extremely brilliant man, who taught in a particular seminary. And in 2016, last year, he was exposed by a group of rabbanim of doing unspeakably horrible things with women, young women and not such young women, and married women, and single women, all kinds of terrible things. And it happens to be that when this came out, my wife knew this person. And when she had studied in Israel, she always stayed at arm's length from this person, because there was something odd about them and the way that, and you know, my wife is one of several girls, so she had been warned about this person before she came to study in Israel. After this story broke, I came across an article that was published online. Another scandal, let's not miss the point this time around, and it's authored by Shayna Goldberg. Shayna Goldberg is an important educator. She has a lot to say about a lot of different things, many different Torah topics. But in this case, she writes her article about this person, and she hits on a very important point in this context, which I think is exactly what we're talking about. She says, what does she want to talk about for the takeaway from this exploitive rabbi? She says, you have to look at the kind of teacher that this person was. This person was manipulative, was very focused on themselves, creating kind of a cult following for themselves. She says, I want to talk about teachers who use fear and guilt frequently and indiscriminately in order to motivate and inspire. Teacher who deliberately try to alienate their students from everything they come from, their parents, families, homes, previous schools, communities, shuls, even shul rabbis. Teachers who break students down so that they can recreate them in their own images. Teachers who cultivate groupies and are dependent on their students for self-esteem. Teachers who lack real relationships with their own peers because they are, quote-unquote, so devoted to their students. Teachers who teach students not to trust themselves, not to rely on their instincts, and not to listen to their inner voices. What is that a description of? It's a description of gaiva and the power of control. That's one kind of teacher. She says, that's not what we want. There are healthy and positive ways to educate and to inspire growth, whether the trajectory in mind is Haredi, modern, or something else. These ways are usually rooted in respect, humility, responsibility, and trust. And I said, isn't that exactly the point? These are the kinds of midos that Rav Schwartz is telling us that we educators need to be mindful of, because if you start to get away from them, that's where people get into the danger zone. And so We need to always use those as the benchmark. Is it the power of Torah, which is the manipulative power, the controlling power? Or is it the power of Torah that generates creative thinking and ideas and, you know, self-expression? Or is it about, you know, the former? So this idea really resonated. Isn't that what the Piasetzner was talking about in the Chovas HaTalmidim very much? He was, you know, decades ahead of his time, but the whole idea of child-centered education, it's not about me, the educator, or you, the educator, saying, this person is going to be like me because it's all about me. No. It's not about me. It's about them. And that might mean that I might not be the best educator for them. And my job is not to break them down and to make them into some kind of follower of mine. And my measure of success is not, you know, how similar they are to me. Somebody once said about, I think Rabbi Sachs said this about the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He said, you know what made him great? Because the Rebbe didn't make followers, he made leaders. It wasn't about, you know, the Rebbe telling somebody to be like me. It was, be yourself and be a leader. It's not about controlling people. It's about raising people up. And so this is a very tall task. But therefore, you know what that means? You have to be vigilant. We, as educators and rabbis and leaders, we have to be vigilant about ourselves. The Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos on page number 4, Hillel Omer, Hillel teaches you, Al Tifresh Min HaTzibur, and the last line, Va'al Tamin Ba'atzmacha Ad Yom Moscha. Don't trust yourself until the day of death. You know what? Just because we're here sitting about talking about this tonight, doesn't mean that we shouldn't go home and think about this next week and next year. We have to make sure. We have to stay on our toes. Ad Yom Moscha. The Gemara says in Brachas and Chavtes Amid Aleph, tells the story of Yochanan Kohen Gadol. He was a Kohen Gadol for decades. And you know what happened at the end of his life? He became a Tzaduki. You can't trust yourself. And it's not just, I would say it's even more, not just in the area of becoming a Sadducee. I don't know how many people, they're going to write tradition, you know, articles about rabbis who became Sadducees. That's not really the big concern today. What's the big concern is the Gemara on page 5. It's the Yerushalmi in the beginning of Shabbos, Yerushalmi first parak of Shabbos, where there it's talking about Gzeiros Midrabanan and how people have to be careful about Gzeiros Midrabanan. So in that context, the Gemara Yerushalmi mentions this Mishnah, Al Tamin Ba'atzmacha Ad Yom Moscha, Maisa B'chasin Echad Shaya Yoshi V'shone Al Tamin Ba'atzmacha Ad Yom Ziknuscha. The Yerushalmi says there was one pious man. He was a chassid. He was pious. And he learned this Mishnah and said, Al Tamin Ba'atzmacha Ad Yom Ziknuscha, similar kind of concept until you're very old. And he says, Kagon Ani. I'm old. I don't have to worry about this kind of stuff. I don't have to be concerned. Asa Chararucha V'nisisei. So says the Yerushalmi, a ruach, meaning a shade, a demon, came in the form of a woman and seduced this rabbi. That's what it says. Vishari toibe. And afterwards, he started to feel bad about himself. He started to regret the fact that he wasn't careful, even though he's in his old age. Amrale said, don't worry, this woman said to him, Lo titzok ruach ana. Ezel ve'esh tevi l'chavrcha. Don't worry, I'm just a ruach. I'm a shade. I'm not really a woman. But you know what? Go back and ishtavi should be the same as your friends. Just like your friends are cautious, you also have to be cautious. Don't say, you know, I'm immune to this. There's no such thing. That's part of the teva ha'adam. And it doesn't matter how old a person is. So a person has to self-manage, has to be constantly self-aware and checking to make sure that they have their midos. But the truth is that it's also the opportunity, the community has a role too. What is the reckoning that's going on now in the news media? All of a sudden, the community is recognizing that it's not okay. The people are saying this is not okay, so that opens the door for people to speak up. If we lived in a culture where it wouldn't be acceptable, so the minute it started happening, everybody would speak up. But because the culture was so permissive for so long, everybody got away with it. All the people who were playing these games, they got away with it. Why? Because nobody stood up and said, we won't tolerate this. Only now are we not going to tolerate it. Even the late night talk show hosts won't tolerate it. Even they're getting on them. Everybody's saying, we're not going to tolerate it. So now that everybody doesn't tolerate it, it won't be tolerated. But ad kamo that the society tolerates it, so everyone's going to look the other way. So now we're seeing a shift in society. So that means that the society bears some responsibility to make sure to maintain that. If we were leading a Jewish society, we would expect the same thing. And the truth is, this idea that the society has to maintain a certain standard maybe is relevant in an episode that happened in last week's parsha. It's a complicated episode beyond the scope of tonight's whole discussion. But the Rambam tells us in page 7 that B'nai Noach, Hilchas Malachim, Parak Tes, B'nai Noach are mitzuveh on dinim, on establishing a system of law and order. So what does that mean? So it's a machlokas rishon. And the Rambam's opinion is, chayavin lohu shivdinin v'shoftim b'chol plach u'plach. They have to set up judges and executors in every district, lodim b'sheish mitzvahs elu, to govern according to the other six mitzvahs of B'nai Noach, including, you know, of course, theft, etc. You know, basic standards of social living. Says the Rambam in the bracket, if a Ben Noach doesn't follow these laws, he's chayav misa. Umepnei zeh nischayvu kol balei Shechem hariga. For this reason, all the people in Shechem were really obligated to be put to death without Shimon and Levi. Shimon and Levi pulled it off, but they were chayav misa on their own. Why were they chayav misa? Because they violated the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. What did they do? The Rambam says, I'll tell you what they do. Because Shaharei Shechem Gazal, Shechem stole this woman and abused her. And what happened? V'him ro'u v'yadu v'lo danuhu. They saw it, and they knew it, and they didn't call him out on it. So the whole city, the whole society was Chayav Misa, because they all looked the other way. So it's the community's responsibility to say, we won't tolerate this, for everybody to get together and write editorials and make protests and create a culture where these things are not acceptable. And finally, that's happening now, Baruch Hashem. But the ideal is, it's also true in our own community. We have to make sure that within our own institutions, there is a culture of people being safe to speak out in various ways. And not that we're going to kind of put it under the rug, you know, and pretend like it doesn't happen and there's a lo etzleinu. No, we have to create a space and an environment where people say, this will not be tolerated. There's no tolerance at all for this kind of thing. And so people need to be able to speak out. So the last ta'ara is that, well, if people are going to speak out, we have to take it seriously. And if we don't take it seriously, then it's going to lead to terrible things. The Gemara here in Nidan, Samach Aleph Amud Aleph, quotes a very interesting pasuk. V'habor asher hishlich sham yishmol es kol pigrei anoshim asher hika biyad Gedalia. The pasuk in Yirmiyah describes these people who had been killed and thrown there by Yishmael that Gedalia had killed. The Gemara says, what are you talking about? V'chi Gedalia hargan? V'halo Yishmael hargan? Right, what's the story here? This is the story of Gedalia ben Achikam, who was placed as the semi-autonomous ruler of the Jewish people after Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the Beis Hamikdash. He said, okay, Chevra, a few of you people can stay in Israel. Gedalia is going to be the governor. And a guy by the name of Yishmael ben Nesanya assassinated him. That's the reason we have Tzom Gedalia. And that was essentially the end of the Yishuv in Eretz Israel. So who are the people who Yishmael killed? The Gemara says, what are you talking about? The Pasuk says, Asher hika biyad Gedalia. He was killed by the hand of Gedalia. Gedalia didn't kill these people. Gedalia was himself assassinated by this guy. Why is Gedalia on the hook for these people's murder? What do you think is the answer? The Gemara says, you know why? Because Rashi explains, the Gemara says, El mitoch shahayelo lochush la'atzas Yochanan ben kireach v'lochash mala alavakasav ki'ilu hargan. Because before Gedalia was assassinated, a man by the name of Yochanan ben Kareach came over and whispered into his ear. He says, you know, there's a guy by the name of Yishmael who's going to plan to assassinate you. And you know what Gedalia said? No, I'm not going to take it seriously. And probably what he says, Lashon Hara. I'm not going to listen to some Rochel, some guy who's telling me Lashon Hara. And you know what happens when he didn't listen to that Lashon Hara? he got assassinated, all these other people got killed, all the Jewish people went into exile, and we have a fast. If you want to know why you're hungry on Tzom Gedalia, it's because he didn't listen to the Lashon Hara. What is the Gemara telling you? So Chafetz Chaim explains in Sefer Chafetz Chaim. It doesn't mean you have to be makabel the Lashon Hara. You have to be choshish. If somebody comes forward with an accusation, with a statement, it doesn't mean that every random rumor, you have to treat it as truth, but you have to take it seriously. You have to be choshish for it. You can't just blow it off and say, you know, it's Lashon Hara. Pasnish, I'm very frum. I'm not going to listen to your Lashon Hara. What do you mean? Especially because this kind of Shmua Ra affects other people. If you look in the Netziv on page 9, the pasuk about Lashon Hara, the Torah tells us there's a juxtaposition between Lo Selech Racha Be'amecha, don't be a talebearer, and Lo Samad Al Damreyecha, and don't stand idly by when your brother's blood is being spilled. Says the Netziv in the Hamik Davar, look at the bottom, he says, V'od Nechlal B'smichas Asharas Elu. You know what is included in this juxtaposition? Bottom of page 9. Sha'af al gav sha'azhar lo telech rachil, even though you're not supposed to be a slanderer or gossiper, mikol makom, lo samad al dam reyecha. Don't stand by. Hainu, im yodea she'ish echad rotze leirid l'chav l'adam acher. You know that somebody is going to injure or endanger somebody else? Harizem mechuyav lohodia. You have to tell them. V'asr lamad al dam reyecha. Rav Schwartz once said this to me in the context of Shiduchim. He says, sometimes people are afraid to say Lashon Hara, but they should also be afraid of Losamad Al Dam Reyecha. You know, sometimes what you don't say is more damaging than what you do say. So this means we have to create an environment where, number one, we take people's concerns seriously. To say we're like Gedalia, we're not going to take it seriously. Look what a churban it creates. We have to take it seriously. And if we see something, we have to say something. Rav Schechter has it published, and Rav Schwartz and many other Rabbanim, when it comes to these kinds of questions of abuse, you have to call the authorities. There's no din of Mesira, because they have ways of checking it out that's more comprehensive and more effective than what we're going to put in. They have an interesting article in here about the Takana Forum, which in Israel investigates these kinds of things. And it's an interesting article, talks about the merits and the challenges, but the idea that we have to create a zero-tolerance policy, that the community won't stand for it, but that the community is going to be responsive and listen to people when they come forward. And if somebody knows something, they shouldn't just say, oh, I can't say it because it's Lashon Hara. Adrabah, it's Hatzolas Nefashos. It's Losamad Al-Dam Reyecha. So hopefully the more that we make people aware of these kinds of things, we can address these issues. So to summarize, I think there are just a couple of take-homes. The first is that the story of the Bnei Eli teaches us the progression of the corruption of power and how it can even land in sexual exploitation, even in the Makom HaMikdash, even in the Mishkan, and how careful we have to be, and we have to be straight about it and see it for what it is and not try to push it under the rug and ignore it and understand the severity. Look at the punishment that Eli's family got. Number two, we need to create in general the appropriate boundaries, and today it's not just between men and women, it's also between men and men, unfortunately, when it comes to teachers, rabbeim, and boys in school. We also need to establish boundaries beyond what it says in the Shulchan Aruch, Kalamar Bahareza Meshuvach. But even when those boundaries are there, we also have to be vigilant, because sometimes the people who know the boundaries and who are teaching the boundaries, they themselves are breaking those boundaries. And that perhaps comes from the Hashchasas Hamidos, among other, I'm not trying to oversimplify the case, you know, it's, there are psychological issues here, there are, you know, all kinds of other Yetzirah issues, all kinds of things that are going on. But to create a sense of Shemira is being self-aware of what our Midos are and what kinds of Mechanchim we are, what kinds of Rabbeim, what kinds of leaders we are. Are we controlling leaders or are we facilitating leaders? Is it about us or is it about the students? And we have to be cautious and thoughtful about those. And that we as Rabbeim have to constantly be checking ourselves. Al tamen ba'atzmecha yomoscha. Nobody can say, oh, you know, this is this is not something I have to worry about. We all have to be mindful of it and cautious of it. We have to daven for siyata d'shmaya, that we should go on the straight and narrow, and we should create a community where this is totally not tolerated. It's understood that it would never be tolerated. It's understood that we're going to be receptive and serious about people who come forward to support them, because you're talking literally, you know, atzalos nefashos. And we should make sure that there's proper reporting going on, that people shouldn't say, oh, it's lashon hara, I can't report it. It's lashon hara, but it's also losamad al dam reyecha. So this is the epitome of lashon hara l'toelas that we have to do to address these kind of unfortunate circumstances that we're facing today. So halavai, it should be la halacha v'lo l'maisa. That's what it should be.